This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, planning the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys. And then you get The Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
I'm ready for a nap now. All right. Welcome to a, what's today? Tuesday. Today's Tuesday. Just Tuesday. It seems like the week has gone on longer. Oh, man. But no, it's Tuesday. A lot going on today. First of all, really, Russia? So we were watching. I know I haven't talked a lot about Ukraine lately, but don't think it's not on my mind. You know, people who've listened regularly for a while know that as the invasion of Ukraine got started, I made a call over to Ukraine. I reached out. I do this from time to time. And I called a hostel in Kyiv. And I got on the phone a woman who I've come to know in the month since, Tanya. She owns the Friends Forever hostel in Kyiv. She and her husband live there, and they've become friends. So I've stayed in touch with them. So, you know, what happens, and I haven't given you all the details every time we talk, because we communicate via the Telegram app and we stay in touch. And in fact, a couple of weeks ago, she told me she was going to visit family in Italy and Poland. Yes. So when I heard the news that the town of Kherson was being, you know, it was the one city that Russia actually conquered since the invasion began in February. That was the one town they really took over. And they retreated. They left. Well, that's where Tanya was born. So I sort of celebrated with her in my mind, all the while knowing she was away. So, you know, I checked in with her. Actually, I'm looking back at the messages. So on October 20th, she told me, we're going to Italy. We drive for 2 days. We drove 1,500 kilometers, 200 left, and we're there. She said, it's generally scary to talk about the news. My city of Kherson is now entering the Ukrainian military. The Russians are starting to take out their people. There are many evacuation buses to Crimea, and they threaten Kherson. They say that they will undermine the hydroelectric power station. If they do this, my city will be covered by a wave of 5 meters, and the river there will spill over 5 kilometers. It's very strange. My aunt stayed there. The weather is already winter. Soon at night, it will be 0 degrees Celsius. And I told her, we're watching the coverage here. We see it. I think about you. I'm so concerned about you and your husband. And I said, sending out good thoughts that all of you and the people you hold dear stay safe. So she said, I appreciate your words. That was on October 20th. On November 4th, that was a week ago, Friday, my birthday, actually, I wrote, hey, Tanya, just checking in on you as I continue to worry after hearing the news reports out of Kyiv, sending love your way. And she wrote back. She said, hi, I'm still with my family in Poland. Again, this was 11 days ago. I'm going home in a week, she wrote. Dennis says that the lights are turned off twice a day for 4 hours. The mobile network is very bad and the internet is bad, but the main thing is that the house is warm and there is water. We will deal with other problems. So she sent me a bunch of pictures. Looks like she's having a great time. And I wrote her back a couple of days later saying, you know, happy to see you. I'm happy to see you safe and happy and all that. And, you know, just small talk. And she wrote back a couple of days ago. She calls me Mama Bear because I was worried about her. And I said, this is many months ago. I said, I feel like Mama Bear. I'm just, you know, protecting Mike. Oh, I know what it was. She had a harassing caller who got her phone number the same way I did and was calling from New York and harassing her. And I found the guy's phone number because I did this reverse search thing. I've used it for trolls that have bothered me too. And I found him and I called him and I read him the Riot Act. And so since then, I'm Mama Bear. So she wrote on the 12th. So just 3 days ago, she wrote, Mama Bear, accept my congratulations on your birthday. So she knew it was my birthday. She said, the city where I was born has very good news. Kherson is Ukraine. I finally allowed myself to cry. And then she wrote, I'm still in Poland. I'm going to leave for Kyiv in an hour. So I'll hug my husband in the evening. We haven't seen each other for 25 days. That was 3 days ago. So obviously she's back in Kyiv by now. Right? Well, what happened today is, here, let me just play for you this report, because they can say it better than I can. This is from CNN.
We've had confirmation from Polish authorities of a very, very dramatic and potentially inflammatory moment in history, really, which is that two projectiles of some kind, rockets, missiles, we don't know exactly what. We also critically don't know who fired them, but we do know that they landed in Polish territory, very wow. close to the border with Ukraine, in farmland, hitting a grain store and reportedly killing two Polish citizens or residents. Now, this is a very dramatic potential escalation, obviously, because Poland is a NATO country. There were ongoing cruise missile attacks being carried out in the west of Ukraine, close to Poland's border, at the time that these projectiles landed on Polish territory. It is conceivable that they are Russian missiles. It's equally conceivable at this stage that they could wow. be the spent rockets of anti-aircraft missiles fired by Ukrainians, although that is somewhat less likely on a technical level. But this has all automatically, effectively triggered a meeting of the equivalent of the National Security Council inside the Polish government, who are meeting now to decide how to react and what to say to this dramatic moment. There is, in the worst case scenario, from many people's perspective, a chance that the Poles might be inclined to apply to NATO for the all yeah. for one and one for all type support
should.
On a military level in this, in terms of wanting to go for retaliation. I think that's extremely unlikely, but this is and will be seen as a very dramatic escalation, a spreading of the war outside of the borders of Russia and Ukraine.
You know, there were those who warned that when Russia was retreating from Kherson, that that might not be all it was, that there had to be more to the story. And sure enough, today, again, they bombed Kyiv, where Tanya is back, and they had a couple of bombs touch down in Poland, so thereby escalating the war outside of Ukraine. I sent Tanya a message a few hours ago. And I wrote, emotions are like a roller coaster now. I've been following the news of their withdrawal from Kherson with such joy for you. And today I hear the evil one bombed Kyiv again and Poland, too. It's just unconscionable. I'm so sorry. I hope you and Dennis and all you know and love are safe. Sending love. So just because I'm not talking about Tanya on a daily basis, just know I'm staying in touch with her. And just, God, wishing that this horror would end for them already. So we're still in touch, and I'll keep you posted when I do hear back from her. Really? So, you know, this intrigues me. So Environmental Coffee House, Sandy, who, by the way, is going to be here tomorrow, because Sandy, who does this Environmental Coffee House show on YouTube that you should be watching, has been paying close attention to what's going on at COP27, the climate conference. And so she will join us tomorrow to fill us in on all that. Well, she just wrote in the chat room, meanwhile, everyone keeps interviewing Scott Ritter like there's no other expert on Russian matters. Well, you know, back over a decade ago, back in the Air America days, I used to talk to Scott Ritter a lot. He would come on the show, and he was, you know, he was smart. He was the weapons inspector, right? Well, then he was busted for child pornography. Since then, Well, I ripped up his phone number. I'm sorry, Scott Ritter is not a credible source anymore. So I don't know who's interviewing him, but not me. And when someone, you know, brings him up to me as a credible reference, I remind him. Sorry, anybody who's caught with child pornography, I got no use for. Scott Ritter can go rot in hell. That's all. Google it. Scott Ritter. I'm amazed that people are interviewing him as if he's an authority on anything. Here, child porn. Let's see what comes up. Ritter's sex charges from 2001 unsealed. See, I told you it was 11 years ago now. Here from the Times Union, William Scott Ritter Jr., former United Nations weapons inspector. Let's see, who gained renown for his criticism of U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East, contends his online sexual encounters with teenage girls were only fantasy. Yeah, maybe for you, but they were real people. Nearly 2 years ago, they write, because this is from 2010, Ritter watched his computer screen reveal that an anonymous person who'd been exchanging sexually charged messages with him for 80 minutes was not a 15-year-old girl. It was a cop from a small town in northeast Pennsylvania, alone in his station house and trolling the internet for suspected child predators. And and Scott Ritter was a predator. So who the hell is interviewing him as if he's an expert on anything? I would like to know. So, yeah, don't quote Scott Ritter to me as a source. He's chatting online with 15-year-olds or people he thinks are 15-year-old girls. And then says, it was only a fantasy for you, not for her. Ugh. Okay, so anyway, I don't want to hear about that. I do want to hear, yes, Americans do have very short-term memories. Amazing that anyone would talk to this man as if he's an expert. He's an expert on something, all right. All right, so, you know the news. Last night, they called it. Katie Hobbs is the governor-elect of the great state of Arizona. Arizona, here we come. So here's the latest on our move. Yes, now, as I told you, if DeSantis won here in Florida, we're out of here. And if Katie Hobbs won in Arizona, knowing that, you know, that Mark Kelly won and they have the Democrat who was running for Secretary of State won. I think the Attorney General is still not settled yet, not finished. But still, Arizona went blue. And I said, if that happens, that's where we're going. And sure enough, now I got to tell you, people on Twitter who are coming in my timeline and telling me Arizona is a shithole state. People there are crazy. You know what? Mind your own fucking business. I didn't ask you. I'm telling you that's where we're going. If you don't like it, oh, well, you don't have to live there. I'm the one who's going to live there. But and when I tell people, okay, I hear what you're saying. I didn't ask you. Please stop. They keep going. I block them. Don't berate me for my choice of where I'm going to move. It's amazing the chutzpah that some people have. It's not your life. It's my life. But regardless, so we are going to Arizona. Here's the thing. We may not have to go by the end of this month, which would be really great because if you knew me, you'd know that I'm a procrastinator and I'm nowhere near packed. And yeah, we're supposed to be out by the 30th of the month. And so we may be able to buy ourselves literally a few more months. And so we can go after winter because frankly, moving in winter is not fun. Plus the prices are still really high right now because of inflation. They're going to come down. They were already starting to come down. But if we're going to rent a house, I would like the prices to come down a little more. Plus on the move and gas. And I'm thinking in a few months, the prices will come down a little bit. So actually, David's out on an appointment now. I'll know when he comes back. whether or not we have that respite for, you know, a few months. But ideally, we leave Florida and head to Arizona late March, early April. So anyway, that's the idea. For those of you saying it's hot, yeah, it's hot. I live in Florida. It's hot and humid here. You can have the humidity. Let it melt your brain, and I'll just stay here. I mean, I'll just go there. Thank you very much. You know, Arizona at least is going blue. Florida is going bright red. And frankly, I don't want to be here. Oh, I want to share with you. David wrote a letter to the editor of the Miami Herald that they published today, but they edited it. So I'm going to read to you the unedited version of the letter that he wrote. They cut out some of, the best lines. So this is my husband's letter to the editor of the Miami Herald. You ready? He wrote, Alex Rorty's article on the 22 Democratic election debacle in Florida offers a litany of excuses as to why the party performed so poorly. Every one of them misses the mark. This wasn't about the money. It was about the Manny. Democrats were doomed in Florida the minute that Manny Diaz was anointed the head of the state party apparatus. When one of the first acts of the state party chairman is to publish an op-ed in your paper condemning the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida, the handwriting was on the wall. And it references that op-ed from July 22nd, 2021. Listen to the people. Their protests are about Cuba's repression, not the U.S. embargo. Publishing an op-ed that was guaranteed to alienate a significant portion of not only the party's voters, but also their donors, was ill-advised at best and completely tone-deaf at worst. Mr. Diaz needed to be more concerned with defeating the fascists running Florida, not the ones running Cuba. If you take note of the election results from around the country, you'll find that the overwhelming majority of candidates who espoused exactly the positions Mr. Diaz felt compelled to denigrate won their elections, while those with his views were eviscerated at the polls. Mr. Diaz should do himself and Florida Democrats a favor by resigning his post so that someone remotely competent might have a chance to resurrect the fortunes of Democrats in Florida. I think he could easily find a home for his views. I hear Rick Scott is looking for help. It's in today's Miami Herald. You can find it. I actually tweeted it and Facebooked it out. But, you know, the Florida Democratic Party is complicit in their horrible attempt at doing what they should be doing. I know I didn't state that very well, but you get the idea of what I'm saying, right? Right. Okay, we are going to move on, although we are still going to talk a bit about Florida because it enters this conversation that we're about to have, actually plays a pretty big role in it. So yesterday, I know I'm still on Twitter. I have a Mastodon account. I have a Counter Social account. It's just, they're so overwhelming. And, you know, I know how to use Twitter. But as Marcy Wheeler told us yesterday, it might not be around too much longer. So anyway, I'm trying to hedge my bets. But yeah, I'm still on the Twitter machine. And yesterday, so I read Jeff Charlotte, friend of the show, tweeted out something about this article that was in the New York Times that dealt with the trans gender identity, right? Gender affirmation. The fight that the Republicans are taking to a different extreme. And he said, if you read this article without reading Sarah Posner's Twitter thread to go along with it, you're doing yourself a disservice. So I read Sarah's Twitter thread and I thought, oh my God, I got to get her on the show because we need to talk about this. So with that, we welcome Sarah Posner back to the show. And I say back because you were here like 5 years ago. I don't think we were doing video then. But
has it really been that long?
It has been. It was 2017, I think we spoke.
Well, so, yes, time flies when you're having fun, right?
Oh, it's so much fun.
But
welcome back. I'm glad you're here. And I thank you so much for writing and for covering what you do, because you tend to center your work on religion and politics, which, you know, those two things, they should be like, you know, the same ends of a magnet. They should repel each other. Or oil and water. They should be separate. And yet today's Republican Party doesn't think there's supposed to be separation of church and state, or so they tell us.
That's right.
That's frightening. To hear their misinformation, to hear how they say, you know, that the founders didn't believe that there should be separation of church and state. What constitution are they reading?
They're reading the same constitution, but they've managed to engage in some long-term propaganda and historical revisionism about it.
Revisionism is definitely, and propaganda they know well. So so this article in the New York Times, let me just pull it up here, because the headline is "They Paused Puberty, But Is There a Cost?" And then the subtitle is "Puberty Blockers Can Ease Transgender Youth's Anguish and Buy Time to Weigh Options, But Concerns Are Growing About Long-Term Physical Effects and Other Consequences." And so you felt compelled to take apart this article, or actually push back in certain ways. Tell us what was wrong with the New York Times piece.
Well, for one thing, it inadequately described how gender-affirming care, which includes, very crucially, puberty blockers, is the accepted standard of care by every mainstream medical, psychological, psychiatric, mental health, you name it, organization in the United States. And yes, just like with other kinds of medical treatments and drugs, there are some risks in terms of, like, you know, bone density was one that they brought up quite frequently in the article. But, you know, when you weigh some potential damage to your bone density versus, you know, being suicidal because you're not getting the gender affirming care that you need, you know, these are not, you know, it's not fairly describing the consequences. But what really got my goat about the article, and which my Twitter thread was about, my Twitter thread wasn't really about their botching of the science and medicine of all of this.
Right.
But it was really more about the fact that they did not discuss how all of the attacks on healthcare for gender-affirming healthcare for trans kids and trans people of all ages in state legislatures or by Republican governors is generated by the Christian right. And that all of the laws relating to gender-affirming healthcare, banning trans kids from sports, banning them from bathrooms, and so on, was ginned up by the religious right. It wasn't ginned up by people who had legitimate concerns, quote unquote, about the science and the medicine behind this. This was ginned up by religious zealots who originally were concerned that perhaps the American public had become too accepting of LGBTQ people after the Obergefell decision in 2015. And so one of the things that they thought would be a good idea would be to attack trans people because maybe they could make the general public and not just their followers blanch at the idea of trans people having equal rights. And I think that the article in the New York Times, sadly, by excellent reporters,
yes,
really reflected how that kind of pushing of that agenda does have an effect on people outside the world of the religious right.
Without a doubt. And so you say that, you know, you've been covering the religious right assault on trans rights for years. In fact, you've written a couple of books really, I guess, more than just on this subject, but that encompass it as well. Unholy and God's Prophets, both dealing with this alliance between the Republican Party and these right-wing religious zealots who, you know, it blows my mind when I just a couple of weeks ago, I interviewed the author who worked with God, I hate to call it Giancarlo, the pool boy who had the affair with Becky Falwell. I hate to call it an affair, who, you know, it was their own business. You know, what adults do in the privacy of their own home is one thing, but the hypocrisy was stunning. And just the hypocrisy is what I keep coming back to. The religious right, the moral majority, the, you know, a focus on the family, all these groups that, you know, push their morals on us when it turns out they've got no morality. You know, they're as perverted as the rest of us, but they pretend that they're not. And yet they want to tell you how to live your life. They're the ones, I mean, they come out in the biggest numbers to vote for the Trumpers, which it just, the two things just don't go together in my mind. It, how, if someone, and I'm an atheist, I'm an atheist Jew. So go figure. But I'm more Christian than these people because I understand doing unto others. They seem to come from a place of hatred and denying other people, I can put in quotes, anybody different from them from finding their own happiness. Is this a fairly recent thing or have they always been this horrible?
they have for decades sought to restrict the rights of women, of immigrants, of LGBTQ people, obviously. But something that you said that really made me think of a very specific kind of hypocrisy involved in this assault on trans kids, trans minors' rights to obtain gender affirming care, and that is the big full bore assault on gender affirming care that came in 2021 when Arkansas passed the first ban on gender affirming care for minors, and then this year when Texas began to investigate the parents of trans kids for child abuse. That this all came amid an uptick in the rights claims, in the religious rights claims, that woke leftists were trying to infringe on their parental rights by teaching them their kids, you know, critical race theory in school, right? So parental rights was the core of the whole attack on wokeness and all of that in public schools, which is ongoing from the right. Yes, but they were doing that at the same time that they were basically telling the parents of trans kids that they could not make their own decisions about the health care that they were going to get for their own kids.
Right. And the parents that are consulting with professionals, with doctors, with psychiatrists, with people who are trained to deal with this, because it is a medical condition. And there are educated people who understand how to help these kids. And yet these politicians and these religious nuts think that they can better tell you how to take care of your family. It's astounding. But this is what they do. So, Sarah, you'll love this. I'm in Florida. Not for long. No. Not for long, because I've been saying all along, if DeSantis wins again, I'm out of here. And my husband actually went to Arizona State University, as did his son, and his son still lives there. And so we said, all right, we're going to go to Arizona because my husband's a weather wimp. He won't go anywhere cold. So we're limited as to where we can go. And so it was Arizona. But I've been saying all along, if Carrie Lake wins, I'm not going there. But Arizona went blue, baby. And so we are going there. Things in Florida have deteriorated so much. So keeping in mind that we're going to have this conversation, I pulled a clip from the one and only debate we had in the governor's race. It was Ron DeSantis, or as I call him, moron death sentence, against Charlie Crist. And this subject came up. And I want you to hear what Ron DeSantis had to say.
Of Across the country and here in Florida, lawmakers are divided on the issue of gender transitions for minors. The Florida Department of Health has held firm that there are risks associated with certain puberty blocking and hormone therapies for children, despite pushback from the federal government and other states. Where do you stand on minors undergoing so-called gender-affirming medical procedures and therapies? Governor?
Well, so-called is important because when they say gender-affirming care, they mean giving puberty blockers to teenage girls and teenage boys. They mean doing double mastectomies on young girls. They mean...
Are they doing double mastectomies on young girls? No, they're not. Right. Okay. I'm going to do this because he lies a lot here.
They mean chemically castrating young boys.
Are they chemically castrating young boys?
They are not.
They are not. Okay.
Boys, that is wrong. We are not going to allow that to happen
in
the state of Florida.
Yeah.
A lot of kids go through a lot of different things. A lot of the dysphoria resolves itself by the time they become adults. And we have a number of people that have spoken out in favor of what we're doing.
Probably
to say
three.
You should not mutilate minors.
They're
and
not they mutilating
went
minors.
This when they were minors. Now they're adults and they regret it. And other countries in Europe that went down this road have now backtracked.
He lies.
So we're doing the right thing. It's inappropriate to be doing basically what's genital mutilation.
It is not genital mutilation. You know, I scream when I hear this crap, just like I would scream when I heard them saying that, oh, those Democrats, they want abortion up until delivery and after.
Right.
No, that's
bullshit.
It's just bullshit. It's not true. And they keep saying it and we need to call them out on it. Thankfully, the American people are smarter than that. But that's the kind of shit they're saying. This guy is evil incarnate. I mean, he is of Satan. He's just horrible.
Well, let me tell you a story that is included in one of the stories of mine that I linked to in the Twitter thread that we started the segment talking about. You know, as I mentioned, Arkansas was the first state in the country to ban gender affirming care for minors. The law, which is called the SAFE Act,
right.
The acronym is Save Adolescents from Experimentation Act. Okay, so the entire premise of this law, which is under injunction right now by a federal court.
Good.
Okay. Because it was immediately challenged as being unconstitutional, but we'll get to that. But the entire premise of it is that gender affirming care is experimental and somehow weird and dangerous, and it hasn't been approved. I mean, just the whole title of the act that this is not something that the medical establishment accepts as the standard of care. So they're basically placing these legislators who don't have a medical background and do have a religious agenda as the experts contra the entire medical establishment. So when that law, when that bill was being debated in the Arkansas legislature, you know, the head of the Arkansas Academy of Pediatrics, which is, you know, the Arkansas chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, you know, folks from all of these different, the American Psychological Association, the American Endocrine Society. I mean, like, long, long list. They went and testified against the bill. They were beside themselves. They were trying to tell the legislators that not getting this kind of care harms trans kids,
right.
Not that the care itself harms trans kids, and that the claim by the sponsors of the bill that getting this kind of care increases suicidal ideation in kids is the opposite, right? Not getting the care increases suicidal ideation in kids. So it was incredibly frustrating for them. Imagine that you're a medical professional and you know from your own practice and from your professional societies that this is the standard of care, and some, you know, legislator in Arkansas comes along and crafts this bill. Well, let's take a look at what was behind the bill. The legislator had attended a boot camp, basically, that was created by the political arm of Focus on the Family.
Right.
They created this this entity called the Statesman Academy, where they train legislators to Christian legislators only. Only Christian legislators may apply for this program. And they spend a week training them to create God-honoring policies and laws in their state legislatures. So the whole goal with the SAFE Act was to get it passed through the Arkansas legislature, a very deep red state, and then use it as a model, like give it to other legislators in other states. Tomorrow, there will be a hearing on the SAFE Act that has been introduced in Ohio.
Wow.
The Ohio sponsor of the bill told me that he modeled it on the one in Arkansas.
Wow.
So it's being copycatted and replicated in red state legislatures around the country. And, you know, make no mistake, this is being driven by a religious ideology that's only shared by a minority of Americans in an attempt to override the accepted standard of medical care. And so, you know, these mainstream media articles that are, you know, just asking questions fail to address the magnitude of what is happening here, where you have medical professionals saying this is the standard of care, and religiously motivated legislators pushing back on it. Does it remind you of anything like getting vaccines for COVID?
Yes. And again, here in Florida, we have a governor and a so-called attorney general who are telling people, do not get vaccinated. Now, this so-called attorney general, I don't know if you know about this guy, Joseph Latipo. He was one of the doctors, and I'm doing air quotes, in the group with the other doctor who Trump liked to cite, who believed in the demon sperm and ivermectin and hydrochloroquine and, you know, the demon sperm. That woman, Latipo, was one of her acolytes. He claims that he was at UCLA in the medical center during the first wave of COVID, yet, funny, nobody at UCLA seems to know who he is. He comes here. DeSantis makes him attorney general, and he tells people, do not vaccinate your children. I don't believe in it.
This is he the attorney general? Or
Surgeon general. Sorry, yeah. Brain fart. Surgeon general may as well be the attorney general because he obviously knows as much about medicine as he probably does about law, which is nothing. He is frightening. And DeSantis just said, oh, yeah, I'm going to keep him on for the next term because he's so brilliant. Again, I trust the professionals. I mean, I do radio. I've done radio my whole life. I'm not going to tell somebody, you know, what medication to take, but I do listen to the doctor and I will pass along what the doctor said. Yeah, you get vaccinated. You know, you wonder what polio is making a comeback because people aren't trusting the vaccines. This is insanity. And it's, you know, Florida has, I always say the humidity will melt your brain. And apparently that's what's going on down here. I can't wait to get out of here. But so this is frightening. And again, I think, except in Florida, this election is showing that they're really pandering to a small minority, that the American public, as a whole, does not go along with this stuff.
That's true, but they do play an outsized role in Republican politics, right?
True,
so
yep.
This is why they've had so much success passing these kinds of laws. Even if they're struck down in court, they can continue to say, well, you know, the courts are stacked against us, or it was a liberal judge, or it was an Obama judge, or what have you. But this is how they... they control Republican Party politics mm-hmm. because the Republican Party could not win without them. The Republican Party is the party of the religious right. So if the religious right did not turn out for them in elections, they wouldn't win. And so therefore, Republicans running in Republican primaries need the religious right to vote for them so they can beat their Republican opponent. So they're constantly trying to outdo each other. And then the other issue is there are, you know, red states like Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi, South Dakota, where the state legislature is deep red. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the citizens of those states are being subjected to laws like this. And so I know that everybody's very excited about the midterm results. And I obviously think that in terms of saving our democracy, they were great.
Yeah.
But I think we can't lose sight of the fact of how, despite their minority views, that the religious right still plays a just an outsized role in Republican politics and therefore in the politics for the rest of us.
Oh, without a doubt. And I'll tell you something that's really frightening. You know, look in Georgia, we have a runoff in the Senate race between Raphael Warnock, who mm-hmm. is a preacher, first of all, who's a brilliant man. He preaches at Martin Luther King Jr.'s church. It doesn't get a whole lot better than that. And yet you got Herschel Walker, a former football player, questioning Raphael Warnock's Christian bona fides. It just blows my mind. And the evangelicals came out huge for Walker. In what yes. universe does this make sense?
Well, to the religious right, someone who is a Christian but is not a Christian like them isn't a real Christian. I mean, these attacks on Warnock and his religious beliefs have been going on since he ran back in
last time, two years ago.
The last partial.
Right. It was just 2 years ago. Yeah.
Right, when he ran against Loeffler.
Yes.
Right.
Oy.
She had filled out. yeah. She had filled out a seat. And so, you know, the religious right in Georgia really geared up their messaging machine
yep.
to portray, to disparage Warnock as a Marxist, as a communist, as a, you know, every trick in the book that the Christian right has used since the Cold War, you know, to attack Christians who aren't like them. It's the same kind of attacks that were used on Martin Luther King.
Right.
In the 60s, you know, Jerry Falwell, you know, getting intel from Herbert Hoover J. Edgar Hoover.
I gotcha.
Talk about
we both
hearts.
Had it. Right. There you go. I was following you. I knew what you were saying.
And painting... painting King as a dangerous anti-American communist. Now, today, the religious right really likes to pretend that Martin Luther King is their hero. Of course, they are against
right.
everything that he stood for and are gladly vilifying his, you know, somebody who is made in the same mold in terms of his theology and his politics, you know, disparaging him as an anti-American traitor.
Yep.
So, you know, I think for the Republican Party, it doesn't matter that Walker is the, you know, so unqualified. I don't even have the superlative to describe how unqualified he is to serve in the United States Senate. But they're supporting him because, you know, they're power hungry, obviously, but it wouldn't occur to them to cross Trump, who, you know, handpicked him. And it would occur to them that, you know, maybe the Democrat who's competent would be a better choice than the Republican who has, you know, Walker's just an astonishingly terrible candidate.
Horrible. But think, you mentioned Trump. They embraced Trump. Who, you know, holds up the Bible upside down and says 2 Corinthians. The man's never cracked a Bible open. Over Joe Biden, who is a religious Catholic man. It just boggles the mind. I know Catholic is not their brand of Christianity.
No. The religious right includes evangelicals and Catholics. But to them, Joe Biden isn't a real Christian because he's pro-choice. He's not a real Christian because he's pro-LGBTQ rights. And he's not a real Christian because he's a Democrat. I mean, you know, it's not complicated. That's basically their calculus.
Wow.
And, you know, yes, they will admit that Trump may not be a Christian like them either, but they claim he did more for Christians and Christianity as president than any other president in history. And also sometimes God picks an unlikely leader to lead a country at a critical juncture in its history. And that critical juncture is now, because they're trying to fight off the leftist wokeism, you know, gender ideology that's in there, they claim is ruining America.
Wow. 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 All this just makes my head explode. So Sarah Posner, Sarah, in addition to, she wrote those two books, you've read her in Rolling Stone, in The New Republic, in Vice, HuffPost, The Nation, Mother Jones, New York Times, Washington Post, American Prospect. I mean, it goes on and on. And you also write, you're a contributor at MSNBC. And I was reading some of your stuff over there, and you wrote a piece about this ad. This ad that the DeSantis campaign dropped in its final days. Now, my listeners know, because I've played it incredulously going, what the? Oh, my God, what is this? And just to refresh you for a few seconds, this bit of a monstrosity here, it goes like this.
And on the eighth day, God looked down on his planned paradise and said, I need a protector. So God made a fighter.
Oh, my God.
God said, I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, kiss his family goodbye, travel thousands of miles for no other reason than to serve the people, to save their jobs, their livelihood.
Okay, we've heard it. Listeners heard it. So, Sarah, I read your piece. Since you wrote that, have you learned where that was plagiarized from?
Yes, the Paul Harvey God made a
farmer. Oh my God. This is the ad. It's a direct ripoff from a Dodge Ram truck ad and a Paul Harvey speech, but
and
seriously.
On the eighth day, God looked down on his planned paradise and said, I need a caretaker. So God made a farmer.
You know, they used, even down to the point where his daughter wants to follow in his footsteps. That's a direct line. This is almost verbatim. It's bad enough that they're casting Ron DeSantis as God. I mean, we've already been there with Trump.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not seeing the comments anywhere that it's totally plagiarized from a Paul Harvey speech and a Dodge Ram truck commercial.
Well, I actually, when I wrote my piece about it, I did not know that. I think I don't pay that close attention to.
I didn't know either. A listener told me, right?
Dodge Ram commercials. And, you know, I'm a good 10 plus years older than Ron DeSantis, and the Paul Harvey thing didn't ring a bell for me either. And then some people pointed it out to me. And I think that, you know, I mentioned this in the piece. I think that if called on it, DeSantis and his advisors might have wanted a sort of like, well, a way out of the claim that, you know, he was anointed, by saying, oh, like, you know, it's just a riff on the Paul Harvey thing. Don't worry about it. Right.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that makes it better. And I don't know, like the possible, you know, it's not really plagiarism, but the, you know, cause it's a legitimate riff,
I guess.
But that bothers me less than the actual content of it, because like, that was not the subject matter. And, you know, he could have used other vehicles for, this same message. And it's really the message that's problematic and not the riff.
Right. Well, but, you know, it is the message. And of course, it's reminiscent of this.
I am the chosen one.
Yeah, he is the chosen one. That, you know, Trump didn't come out and say it very often, but he certainly encouraged others to say it. And he said it that one time.
Right. Well, I think, you know, Trump knew what others were saying about him. And DeSantis knows, you know, in terms of, you know, Trump is anointed and, you know, Trump is like King Cyrus, or Trump is, you know, God's chosen leader. And DeSantis knows that that's the space he's operating in now. Right. So like, he's setting himself up for the possibility that maybe there will be a space for him to challenge Trump. But he also knows that Trump has, you know, for the last 6 or 7 years, really riled up a base that believes that they are in a spiritual war between good and evil, and that spiritual war is taking place in the political realm, and that they are going to listen to prophecies and revelations from God and notions that this leader or that leader was anointed by God to lead this spiritual army against what they see as a demonic left that is destroying America. I know it sounds like crazy that like people think that, but this is really commonplace talk on the right. And so I think that DeSantis is starting to try to create that space for him, whether he runs for president in 2024 or not. He knows that he needs to really like light a fire under the people who really believe in this spiritual warfare stuff and are would be willing to go to bat for him as being the anointed one.
You know, it's frightening. Again, with the rise of this Christian nationalism, you hear Marjorie Taylor Greene talking about, oh, of course there should be a national religion. And yes, it's Christianity. And if you're, you know, the founders wanted that. And, you know, they're leading us down this rabbit hole of really a scary place. But I have to think that most Americans are not there. And take a bit of encouragement from the outcome of this election, saying they've heard enough. The pushback on this is happening, and we're not going to let them do this to this country.
Right. I think that's definitely right. I also think that someone like DeSantis is going to rely on two things. On the one hand, generating enthusiasm from that base. And then on the other hand, the mainstream media covering him as a more moderate alternative to Trump.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going to play both sides of it.
And they are. And I got, you know, look, I had problems with the corporate media throughout the election for perpetuating the horse race mentality and promoting these polls that were obviously flawed to make it a horse race. Right. You know, I had a feeling they weren't right. And if those election polls were so wrong, red tsunami, what? I have to think that maybe Joe Biden's approval numbers aren't quite so bad either, you know, because you can't trust any of it. But they're going to, you know, look, I'm not as not untrusting of the media as, you know, Trump and his acolytes who call it the fake news. I think Fox is fake news. They make shit up. But not all media is, but they are more concerned with ratings and money. I think that's their top priority, and getting stuff right it maybe falls a little below that. I think this is dangerous. And it just, it scares me that they are. I heard Ali Velshi the other day, who I usually like, say something about, well, this Republican is more moderate. For instance, he's not a Trump supporter. He's a DeSantis supporter. There's no difference. When will people realize that DeSantis is every bit the fascist that Trump is? You heard what he said about trans kids. What he's doing down here is really scary. So I caution my colleagues not to refer to DeSantis as more acceptable. He's every bit as dangerous, if not more, than Trump because he's smarter.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know if he's smarter. I think he's
better educated. He's better educated.
Okay, but I think that Trump is very, like, he's very manipulative and has been manipulative successfully, even though you and I might see directly through the manipulation.
Right.
He's been very good at that. I'm not positive DeSantis has that, in part because he's just like not Trump and isn't this like businessman who got away with criming his whole life. And also he doesn't have the, I was a reality TV star right. working for him. So, you know, I don't know that he would be able to pull off some of the things that Trump has been able to pull off, but it's definitely giving him an assist to say that he's the more moderate or acceptable candidate.
Right.
Ugh. An unearned assist.
It is frightening. And back to go full circle, this is, by the way, Transgender Week of Awareness. I think this week is Transgender Awareness Day. You know, what they are doing in the name of political whatever expediency or something is really harming a lot of kids, young people who are already going through a very difficult time. And again, show me their medical degrees and we can talk. And until they have that, I don't want to hear from them. And I hope the American people would realize that. But on every one of these culture war stakes that they're driving in the ground, it pulls us further apart. And it's all based on nonsense. So I appreciate the work you're doing, Sarah. I'm so glad you are shining a spotlight on this because someone's got to do it.
Thanks, Nicole.
Thank you so much. I hope we can talk again because this, I think, is a topic that is not going away. They are imposing their religious beliefs on the rest of the country. I have to believe that in the long run, it's going to backfire on them, but it's still frightening.
Yes.
All right. Sarah Posner, find her all over the place on the Twitter still at Sarah Posner. I'll put links. I'll put a link to your website and follow her. Read her stuff because it's really good. Thank you so much, Sarah. This has been really important.
Thank you, Nicole. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. So I decided I wanted to end the show today on, you know, a fun note because, you know, I like to have fun. But there was nothing current. So... Sunday is Transgender Day of Remembrance when trans people who died violently are honored. Thank you, Karina, in the chat room. See, I learn from you guys all the time. So I went through the old archives to see what I could pull that would be a great end of the show song to go out on today. And funny, it might be my favorite Randy Rainbow production. And it goes back to 3 years ago with something that Donald Trump said, but it just fits. So take it away, Randy Rainbow.
Well, it is a special day indeed, as I am joined now by the divine Miss T, our Lord and Savior, King of the Jews. Am I leaving anything out?
Brilliant, great.
Don't push it. Donald Trump, you have had a busy few days. G7 meetings, ongoing trade wars with China, bedbugs.
Fake news.
Let's see. You also sent out a controversial tweet saying that you are the King of Israel. Oy. And told a group of reporters that you are the chosen one.
Yeah, he did.
How you doing? You okay?
The news about me is largely phony.
Mr. Not My President, you're acting quite bizarre, ruling like a loon behind your Twitter avatar. Of all your recent antics, this latest one's a pearl. Now it seems you think you're God. Okay, whatever, girl. Your crazy's on full display. Wish you'd just go away. Take a vacay, hun. I hear that Greenland's nice this time of year. Dreaming of walls while the stock market falls. And now you're shaming the Jews. You say you're the chosen one, and I know what you mean. Chosen by the Russian Kremlin in 2016. When will this maniacal messiah complex pass? I hereby order you to get your head out of your ass. And just keep selling us lies and attacking allies. Go on, you king of fake news.
It's fake news. It's disgusting fake news. I read a front page story in the Washington Post.
You're making no sense, bitch. Why are you still talking? It's making me nauseous. Everything you say is bullshit. Yes, everything's lies.
I don't think anybody's done more than me.
Close your mouth, and delete all your socials tonight.
The president has said he is the king of the Jews. The second coming of God, the chosen one.
He's not really interested in helping mankind. When it comes to Bible study, he's way behind. He can't walk on water or give sight to the blind. But he can change a falsehood to a fact with his mind. When they crucify him in the news, he starts tripping. And he kinda speaks in tongues when his dentures start slipping.
Cheeto Christ, Cheeto Christ. He's like if Jesus were pumpkin spice. Cheeto Christ, stupid czar. That tangerine-colored commissar.
Wow! He prefers profanity to biblical psalms. But he can stop a hurricane with nuclear bombs.
Ooh.
He's praised by his disciples, though they've all been misled. And somehow he brought Mitch McConnell back from the dead.
Ew.
He golfs on Sunday, so at church he's not in attendance. And he makes 25 seem like the Christmas of amendments. He calls himself the second coming, I would have done. But according to these porn stars, he could not even come once. Don't you get it wrong?
Don't you get it wrong?
Don't you get it wrong?
Get it wrong.
Give him what he wants
Give
now.
He wants.
Don't get it wrong.
Don't get it wrong.
Cheeto Christ, Cheeto Christ. He's like if Jesus were pumpkin spice. Cheeto Christ, stupid czar. That tangerine colored
car. I think I'm doing a great job.
Don't you get it wrong?
Cheeto Christ,
don't you get it wrong?
Christ,
let me hear you sing now.
Sounds like when he's enticed.
Don't get it wrong.
Cheeto Christ, stupid czar. Who in the hell do you think you are?
God,
barely.
God. Oh my! See, that was just so good to end with that. And what a way to end the show, right? I probably shouldn't have even come back on because that says it all. All right, with that, we're done. I'll see you tomorrow for a Wednesday show. Sandy is going to be here. Environmental Coffee House. We'll find out what's going on with the climate. I wish there was something we can laugh at there. I don't think there is. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks to Sarah Posner. Really important topic. And, keep the faith, everyone. Or not, as the case may be. All right. Take care. Mañana, bitches. Hold on one second. Here we go. Whoops. Nope. That's yesterday's news. Hold on. Got to play today's news. I'm glad I found it right at the top. Oh, man. Give me one second because I got to get you the right news from today. And it is right here.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Congratulations to Arizona's governor-elect, Katie Hobbs. Yes, the Democratic Secretary of State of Arizona narrowly beat the Republican, Carrie Lake, a former TV news anchor endorsed by the former guy. Hobbs saying via Twitter, democracy is worth the wait. Thank you, Arizona. I am so honored and so proud to be your next governor. Her challenger, Republican Carrie Lake, had repeatedly said she would not have certified Joe Biden's win in Arizona in 2020 and began baselessly sowing doubts about the governor's race before it was called. So, as expected, Lake declined to concede, instead choosing to self-own on Twitter by tweeting, quote, Arizonans know BS when they see it. Well, yes, Ms. Lake. They absolutely do. Arizona is among four states that flipped control of governorships, along with Maryland and Massachusetts for the Democrats and Nevada for Republicans. Meanwhile, as of early Tuesday morning, Republicans are within one seat of securing a majority in the House of Representatives. The magic number needed for majority is 218. At this point, Republicans have been projected the winners in 217 House races. Democrats have taken 204. So as of late last night, there are still 14 uncalled House races, most of them in California. Republicans are leading in four of those races, Democrats leading in nine. So it's likely that even by the time you hear this report on Tuesday, that the Republicans may have clinched the majority. But the Associated Press reporting that the GOP, quote, will likely have the narrowest majority of the 21st century. If they got to win, this is the way to do it, right? Stay tuned. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court voted 7-2 on Monday not to block the House Select Committee investigating January 6th from obtaining the phone records of Arizona Republican Party Chair Kelly Ward. She obviously a key supporter of the former guy's unfounded claim that the 2020 election was stolen. Ward, one of those fake electors lined up by Trump and his allies to subvert the results of the election, had argued that disclosing her phone and text records would subject everyone she communicated with after the election to scrutiny, which she said would chill public participation in partisan politics. Oh, please. Well, Justice Elena Kagan last month temporarily blocked the subpoena, pending a review by the full court. And yesterday, the full court did review it, and by a 7-2 margin, said, yeah, turn over the phone records. So who dissented? Well, as you'd expect, Justice Clarence Thomas, who should have recused himself because of a conflict of interest. By the way, this is the second time Thomas moved to hamper the committee's investigation into efforts to overturn that election in which his wife, Jenny Thomas, played a role. Just saying. Alito was the other no vote, in case you were wondering. So the lame duck session is in full swing, and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is moving ahead on advancing legislation to codify same-sex marriage. He filed cloture on Monday on the Respect for Marriage Act, setting up an initial vote for Wednesday. This bill would require at least 60 votes, but the bipartisan group working on it says they're confident they have the support needed. A disappointing story in the midst of all this good election news. Federal prosecutors on Monday said they would not charge former New York City mayor and longtime Trump ally Rudy Giuliani for his work with Ukrainian figures during the Trump administration. This ends a more than year-long investigation that appeared to be focused on whether Giuliani acted as an unregistered foreign agent in 2019 and 2020 as he pushed Ukraine to investigate the business dealings of Hunter Biden. Last May, the FBI raided the New York mayor's home and office. Giuliani said the decision vindicated him. Oh, please. What up, DOJ? I sure would like an answer on this. Meanwhile, President Biden, overseas for the G20 talks, voiced his opposition to China's, quote, coercive and increasingly aggressive actions during a meeting with Xi Jinping. This was Biden's first in-person talks with Xi since taking office. Biden said after the meeting that the two countries should compete vigorously, but added, I'm not looking for conflict. He also said, I absolutely believe there need not be a new Cold War pitting the U.S. against China. Biden repeated the U.S. support for Washington's longtime One China policy that recognizes only the Beijing government, but permits informal relations with Taiwan, which China views as part of its territory. Xi stressed during the meeting in Indonesia that Taiwan is, quote, the first red line that must not be crossed in China-U.S. relations. Russia's invasion of Ukraine is also front and center at the G20 gathering. President Volodymyr Zelensky presented a 10-point peace plan to end the invasion in a video speech to the leaders at the G20 yesterday. The steps include a path to nuclear safety, food security, and a special tribunal for alleged Russian war crimes. Zelensky also urged G20 leaders to use all their power, quote, to make Russia abandon nuclear threats. And he called on Moscow to stop bombing Ukraine's energy infrastructure. Here at home, police in Henrico County, Virginia, on Monday arrested the suspect in the shooting that left three University of Virginia football players dead and another two students wounded. The attack occurred on a charter bus that had just returned to campus from a field trip. University of Virginia President Jim Ryan identified the dead as Lavelle Davis Jr., Devin Chandler, and Deshaun Perry. The shooter, also a UVA student, was on the football team back in 2018. The school had been investigating him for claiming he owned a gun. Oh, man. At least 68 shootings on U.S. school grounds have already occurred this year. That includes 15 on college campuses. Been boosted and vaccinated yet? Well, health officials say they're planning to push this week for people to get boosted against COVID-19 in order to offer maximum protection around Thanksgiving. But sadly, only 10% of people ages 5 and older have gotten the updated booster, despite 73% of that population having gotten their first two shots. Additionally, a new study published Monday said that higher COVID-19 vaccination rates among U.S. children could prevent thousands of pediatric hospitalizations and millions of missed school days. And flu season is here. What are you waiting for? And finally, The former guy intends to announce another White House run tonight at Mar-a-Lago, despite pleas from top party officials and many of his aides to hold off. The former guy had teased a big announcement leading up to the midterms, in which Republicans obviously performed badly. Sources say Trump has been privately infuriated over the results, but of course he's blaming everyone else. Trump reportedly thinks it would look weak if he doesn't launch his 2024 bid, as he has basically promised to do. Oh, the humanity. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.